It's early afternoon in Hippolyta Hall's apartment. Story time for her toddler, Daniel.
And then the baby bear said, "Someone's been sleeping in my bed, and she's still there." And Goldilocks? Well, she woke up and she jumped out of the window and didn't stop running until she got home. And that is the end of the story. There.
Eerie!
Oh, did you like that, Daniel? Did you like it? Now, you know what's going to happen now. You got it, baby cakes. Time for your nap. Where is Daniel's num-num? Oh, here it is. Now you have a lovely, lovely nap. Dream good dreams, and Mama will come and get you when you wake up. Okay, baby?
The Sandman, Act 2, Episode 20, The Parliament of Rooks.
Soon, I am going to start climbing the wall.
Hi, this is Carla.
Hi, Carla. It's me, Lyda.
Hey. And how's my little cutie wooty?
Daniel. Oh, he's fine. I just put him down for his nap.
And Mom?
Me? I am going stir crazy, and I have joined the ranks of the walking brain dead. But otherwise, I am.
Baby Daniel is pretty well conditioned to his afternoon nap these days. They have settled well into the new apartment. Lyda is trying to rebuild her life after a two-year hiatus spent in the realm of dreams, where Daniel was conceived with Lyda's late husband, Hector Hall. Freed from the dream by Morpheus of the Endless, Lyda was able to return to the waking world and rebuild her life. But she has paid a steep price to get her life back. It wasn't just the loss of her beloved Hector. One day, she has been told, she will have to give up her child. Born in dreams, Daniel belongs only in part to this world. He has been claimed by Morpheus. Daniel's freshly painted nursery wall sports a mural featuring the owl and the pussycat. Their pea-green boat sails towards an island on which grows a clump of trees. Along the horizon, an alphabet undulates across a painted sky, a sun at one end and a moon and stars at the other. As Daniel's eyes trace the path of the letters, they begin to close. Daniel is asleep. Daniel is already out of his crib. Or rather, while he sleeps, his dream self stands on the floor of the nursery, absent-mindedly steadying himself by keeping one hand on the cot. Happily exploring, he lurches off towards the side of the painted mural. The ABC letters above his head reach Z, but instead of being cut off where the wall ends, continue into a series of symbols and runes unknown to any human alphabet. Steadier on his feet as he moves onward, the carpet under Daniel's feet turns to patchy grass and dirt, and he enters the dreaming. There is something green and scaly poking out from behind a rock. Daniel tries to pick it up. It's the tail of a large green gargoyle named Gregory. Gregory bends his huge head down to inspect the child. Daniel, unafraid, pats his nose.
Ducky!
The sky is a strange grey colour. There's a low mist, and the ground is rocky. Toddling up a slope, Daniel stumbles and uses his hand to steady himself. Gregory, concerned, decides to follow. The hill levels out at a cemetery, where old gravestones stand at drunken angles, grass and weeds between them. Matthew the Raven, big and black, perches on a moss and lichen-covered monument near a flight of stone steps leading further up.
Hi, kid. You come for a secret, too? What's your name, huh?
Bertie!
Bertie. Weird name. You mean me. Yeah, I'm Matthew, a raven at your service. Oh, hey, Gregory, how's it hanging? Yeah? Well, you should try being a bird sometime. Right. Okay, up the steps, kiddo. Come on, one at a time.
Matthew, who's your friend?
Huh? Eve, what are you doing away from the cave?
Matthew, really?
Eve is the widow of Adam, the mother of Cain and Abel, and a long-term resident of the Dreaming. Today she is tall and dark and young. She wears a long wraparound robe and descends to where the toddler is trying to negotiate the steps.
Is there any rule that says I always have to dwell in nightmares?
Well, I don't know. I mean, you always have, as long as we've been together. And rules? Hey, this place is full of more rules than you can shake a stick at. Sometimes I think he makes them up as he goes along.
No, he made them a very long time ago. It's part of his nature, making rules. Up you come, child. I'll carry you up the steps. You can see the House of Secrets. Let's see if Abel is in.
Bertie!
What is he? I thought the kid was a dream at first, but he doesn't really talk.
No, he's a human child.
Yeah? So, what's his story?
His name is Daniel. Won't you all come in? This is indeed an honor. Through here, please.
The House of Secrets is Abel's abode in the Dreaming. The living room has a stuffed moose head on the wall, a stuffed crocodile hanging from the ceiling, and cobwebs all over. The furniture is antique and in terrible repair. Junk is everywhere. Boxes and crystal balls and skulls and Dresden figurines and dead plants and more boxes. There are tongs and thumbscrews and books and cups. An Iron Maiden stands in one corner.
It's a little messy, but I call it home. Do take a seat, Eve.
Thank you. Come, sit on my lap, Daniel.
Eve sits down on a dusty old sofa with Daniel in her arms. Matthew perches on the mantelpiece while Gregory curls his huge green bulk up in a corner.
Would anybody care for refreshments?
That would be very nice. Thank you. Tea, please, with lemon.
Bertie!
Oh, you want to get down, little man?
I don't drink tea, but I'll take a saucer of water. And if you got anything for me to eat, hey, I wouldn't say no.
There may be a dead rat or two left downstairs. Stairs. We've got something nasty in the basement, but he always kills more than he can eat. Eyes too big for his whatever.
Yeah, a rat would be great with the eyes in for preference.
I'll see what we can do.
Little Goldie, the big-footed baby gargoyle, stands by the side of the fireplace. Daniel, crawling across the floor, makes a beeline for him.
Doggy, meep!
His name's Goldie, Daniel. He's a baby gargoyle.
Goldie!
It's weird being a raven. I mean, you really are a raven when you're a raven. When he gave me the option of staying with you as a big black bird or moving on, I suppose I figured I'd be a man in a raven's body. Nope, don't work like that. I am a raven, one of the Corvidae family. Hell, I suppose it could have been worse. I could have been a crow. I mean, they're dumb as shit and they lie a lot.
You can choose your friends, my love. You can't choose your family. Here, sit on my lap and I'll scratch your head.
Matthew. Once a human government agent named Matthew Cable is now Eve's companion. He hops into her lap.
Jackdaws are okay, though. And rooks are just weird. Oh, that is nice, Eve. Magpies are cool. I mean, they've got their own counting rhyme. You ever hear it? One for sorrow, two for joy.
Three for a girl, four for a boy. Five for silver, six for gold.
And seven for a secret, never to be told. It's quite true, you know. Here you are, a rat. It's a bit rotten, I'm afraid.
No problem. They taste better that way. Gives them some flavor. Mm.
A cup of tea.
Thank you, Abel. I assume you served Gregory first because I'm not 9 feet tall and I don't weigh a ton.
Oh, sorry.
I was impressed by his extended pinky, but now he's eating his cup and saucer.
Oh, bad gargoyle.
Hey, Abel. Terrific rat.
Oh, thank you. So Matthew, how's Lord Morpheus?
I'm not sure. I mean, they've been pretty inseparable for the last few weeks. I've hardly seen him. Either they're in his quarters or going for long walks, hand in hand.
Oh, dear.
How'd you mean?
She's really not his type, is she?
I didn't think he had a type.
Why, bless my boots and chin whiskers.
Abel's brother has been hiding overhead all this time. Perched on the stuffed crocodile.
Kane!
Do my eyes deceive me? Could it be? Is my beloved brother actually having a party without me? Oh, be still, my trembling heart.
No, not at all. We were just saying how nice it would be if you were here.
You're not even a good liar, Barrel Belly.
Bang!
Who's the brattling?
His name's Daniel, Kane. A human child. Off limits. He's with me.
A human child? Really? Well, well, well. Three old storytellers have found themselves an audience. Will wonders never cease?
Meep!
So here we are, all three of us. Just like the old days. And we've even got an audience. Let's tell stories.
Oh, I've stopped telling stories.
No one stops telling stories. It's in the blood. Storytellers who don't tell stories aren't anything. They're nothing at all.
No trouble, please, Kane. No trouble.
Lay off, Kane. Anyway, I came here for a secret.
A raven is not a small bird, but Kane is possessed of inhuman strength. He has Matthew by the neck.
Oh, you did you, birdie? But can you keep a secret? Are you sure you wouldn't prefer a mystery? I've got a mystery that'll raise the feathers on the back of your little oh-so-twistable neck.
Kane, let Matthew go.
You piss me off, Kane. And you sound just like Vincent Price.
That bargain basement vaudevillian, he sounds nothing like me. Ooh, you wound me deeply, Matthew. And you stink of rotten rat.
Yeah, and you stink of old ham. Okay. A mystery. But
better be good.
You mentioned rooks earlier. Well, let me give you a mystery of rooks.
As Cain tells the story, he conjures the image of an open stretch of winter countryside where the bare trees are studded with black knots of interlocked twigs, the nests of rooks.
Rook, Corvus frugilegus, also a word meaning to cheat or steal, also a piece in chess. Rooks are the most social of the corvidae. They build nests in rookeries, an obsolete name, incidentally, for a ghetto of thieves and whores, with many hundreds of birds to a tree. They have enough of a language that even humans can tell the difference between their danger calls and their all-clear calls. They can imitate human speech. But there's something else. The mystery. Among the individual corvids, you can speak of a crow, a magpie, and a raven. The mystery is from where we derive the collective noun we use for these birds, like a murder of crows, a tidings of magpies, an unkindness of ravens. A parliament of rooks. You'll get a field, empty. Suddenly the sky is black with birds, and they fall like a ragged black rain onto the field, covering it almost completely. In the center of the field, there's an empty space, and in the middle of that space sits one lone rook. It caws and calls and caws some more. 10,000 little eyes stare at it, unflinching. Sometimes they call out, as if they're asking questions. It's like a parliament. It's like a trial. The lone rook continues to call, and the others wait. This can go on for hours, from dawn till near dusk.
Yeah? Then what happens?
One of two things. On some signal, which human observers have been unable to identify, either the birds take wing as one, leaving the lone rook alone in the field, or again, as one, they fall on the bird and peck it to death. That's what happens.
Why?
It's a mystery, isn't it?
Huh.
Now that's something I've never done, eh, Brother Gullyguts?
Huh?
Pecked you to death?
Huh?
There. That was mine. Now who's next? You, meat boy? No, he's useless for now. It'll have to be you, mother.
I'm not your mother, Cain.
You're everybody's mother.
That's a matter of opinion. But I don't tell stories. Not anymore.
Not even to little children? Little human children? A little son of Adam?
Daniel is now firm friends with Goldie.
Daddy! Meep, 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 meep!
I don't have any stories for Daniel.
Everybody has one story.
Yes. Yes, they do. Okay. Adam had three wives.
Huh? Three?
Sure. It's not a story they tell much anymore, Matthew. It's an old story. It begins with Adam. They say he was hermaphrodite, an androgyne giant, back in the beginning, in the dawn. Male and female created he them, and he called their name Adam. Four arms, four legs, two heads, two sets of sexual organs joined back to back.
Like conjoined twins?
Yes, Matthew. And God divided Adam into two beings, one male, one female, Adam and Lilith. Lilith was Adam's first wife. She was powerful and intelligent. She was, after all, him. A female him. During sex, she insisted on climbing on top. A position of equality. Superiority, perhaps. That was, perhaps, the final straw. Lilith was expelled from Eden, and she planted her own garden. They say she copulated with demons or with the sons of God. She had many children. Adam was left alone. It was then that God created the second wife. Oh, she never had a name, poor thing. God created her for Adam out of nothingness. Bones first, then internal organs, then flesh, muscle, sinew, fat, bile, eyes, snot, skin, hair, breath. Adam watched as she was put together, layer by layer. It wasn't a pretty sight. Not until she was finished, when she took her first breath. Adam couldn't bear to go near her. He wouldn't touch her. He saw her full of secretions and blood. That's what the Midrash states.
The Midrash?
That's an ancient Judaic text interpreting the Old Testament.
Nobody asked you, Moonface.
Bodies are strange. Some people have real problems with the stuff that goes on inside them. You find out that inside someone you know, there's just mucus and meat and slime and bone. They menstruate, salivate, defecate, and cry. You know, sometimes it can just kill the romance. You know that?
Jesus. So what happened to her?
Opinions differ. Most say God destroyed her. A few have claimed that she was permitted to leave the garden alone. Then it was that God put Adam to sleep, took a rib from his side, and from it created Eve. Only when she was complete did Adam wake.
Oh.
He saw Eve, finished and perfect, and took her to wife. And they ate of the tree of knowledge of good and evil, and knowing good from evil, they were no longer in paradise.
It's raining hard in the Garden of Eden. Adam and Eve are leaving. They're wet. She looks to be about 4 months pregnant. They wear leaves around their waists, and they are soaked. Adam has put his arm around Eve's shoulders.
In Genesis, it states that God expelled them because he was scared. Scared that, having disobeyed him once, they'd disobey him again. And they'd eat of the tree of life and live forever, like gods, endless.
Daddy!
Adam and Eve lived together until death parted them. Some there are that say this is true history, and that there really was an earthly paradise. Others claim the tale is merely a metaphor for the rise of consciousness, the bittersweet fruit of wisdom. But this is true. Adam had three wives.
Adam's three wives appear in Eve's vision. The first, Lilith, floats above the ground. Her hair blows around her head. She's smiling, beckoning to them. Half-seen ghosts and forms swarm around her.
And Lilith gave birth to the Lilim, the children of Lilith, who have haunted the nights of the sons of Adam ever since. Mother to so many, then and now.
The next is the second woman, nameless. She's naked, very alone, very vulnerable. She and Eve could be sisters.
And the nameless one, the virgin, was made of flesh and of blood, forgotten, perhaps coldly destroyed, and unmentioned, save in the dustiest of books.
Lastly, there is Eve herself, but seen as an old woman, wearing a shapeless robe, leaning on a stick. She smiles to herself. She is leathered and weathered, by the desert sun. She is very beautiful in her own way.
And Eve lived to be older than any woman who, in the end, did not die, but who retreated to her cave, blamed for sin, for misery, for the fall. But some say Adam married only once, and they speak truly too. That is my story for you, child. Remember it.
Eve stretches out on the sofa, while Matthew goes back to eating his rat. Daniel, sitting on the floor, is taking turns with Goldie to roll a little white object back and forth, like a ball.
Wasn't that nice? A little piece of family history, like flipping through the pages of the family album, makes me go all soft and gooey inside. Just like you, eh, Luckwitz? If I had a sharp rock on me, I could show these nice people just how soft and gooey you are inside. Anyway, now it's your turn. I haven't thrown you off, have I?
My turn?
Yes, indeedy.
I'm not very good with children.
Demonstrably true, given the child is playing with a rat skull he has found under your sofa. I'll have that, Daniel.
Cain eats the little skull as if it were a Day of the Dead candy.
Why don't you tell him the story about the lily that wanted to be an eye? Or, the wolf boy and his lady love, and how they made love beneath the moon. Come on, Blubberball. This is the House of Secrets, isn't it? So tell them a secret.
Cain grabs Abel by the arm, dragging him toward a bookcase piled high with thick leather books.
You have shelves of books here. Go on. Tell him of the doors in the mist and how to open them. Or the true title of the Knights of the Black and White Eagle. Tell him about the girl who could drink only tears and how she fell in love with a woman who had never learned to cry.
Those aren't children's stories, Cain.
No? Well, then. Tell him a children's story.
All right, I will. Okay. A long time ago, long before the world you know was a speck in space, when everything was young, Lil Death and Lil Dream went walking.
Abel conjures such a sugary image of childlike innocence that it could only exist within the realms of dream.
You have to imagine a lovely starry sky, and above and below and walking in the stars are a little death and a little dream. He's got a little mop of black hair and a cute face and a long cloak that trails behind him. And she's got a cute little mane of hair and a big old ankh around her neck and a t-shirt and a mini skirt that comes down almost to her little ankles.
Grotesque sugar-coated drivel.
Shh, Cain.
There, Lil Death was a little older than Lil Dream. Things had the potential to die before they had the potential to dream. But there hadn't been much dreaming or much dying back then. Things were still taking shape, and there was a lot to get used to.
Oops.
You tripped over your cloak, silly.
I got in a pickle.
They were children back then, in the olden days.
Children? They didn't even look remotely human. None of us did back then. What are you trying to feed the child? Sanitized pablum, Lil Death, Lil Morpheus. Revolting.
This is my story, Cain. Leave me alone. So, Lil Death and Lil Dream were out walking, and on their walk, they saw two brothers, two boys. Their names were Cain and Abel. The brothers were fighting.
You gully guts, you ragged.
As the brothers have their duster, a fat, fleecy sheep stands tethered nearby, next to a pile of carrots and apples and spinach leaves.
Abel, the younger brother, had lots of sheep and had given the land's creator a sheep as a present. Cain, who was older, grew fruit and vegetables, and he'd given the land's creator some of them.
Sheep!
But the creator liked the sheep best because it was all funny and fluffy and white.
Because it was warm, steaming meat. It was a bleeding sacrifice, you bloody idiot. You can't even get your own story right.
This is my story. I tell it my way. So, the bigger brother got upset, and that's how they started to fight. When they'd finished fighting, the little girl went over to them. She took little Abel by the hand.
You're coming with me,
she said.
You're coming to play in my garden now.
A garden? But her brother took little Abel's other hand.
I'm building a garden too. Why don't you come with me?
What would I do there?
I'd give you a little house and a job. And you get to tell stories.
What kind of stories? And then Lil Dream smiled.
Secret stories,
he said.
Oh, I think I'd like that,
said Lil Abel. So he got a lovely house and a letter of commission.
Hooray!
But he was lonely. So Abel went up to Dream's big house.
In Abel's vision, Morpheus's castle is a shining white cartoon palace. By its drawbridge, the normally fearsome and huge guardians of the gate are cuddly bedtime toys.
He said hi to the cute little horse with wings and a wyvern who looked like a cute dragon. Well, maybe not as cute as Goldie, and a funny little griffin.
Hi.
Hi, Lil Abel.
Hi, Lil Abel.
Hi, Lil Abel.
And Lil Abel went inside to the throne room, where Lil Dream was sat on a big red throne.
What's the matter?
Asked Lil Dream.
I'm lonely.
Would you like a friend?
Yes, please.
Then go home. There's a nice surprise waiting for you.
Abel went home. And do you know what he found? Next to his little house of secrets was another house. A little house of mystery. Two little houses in the sunshine. Little bluebirds and butterflies fluttered around them, and flowers bloomed in the garden. There was a little low picket fence between the two houses, and sitting in the garden was his brother, Lil Cain.
I'm gonna stay here forever too,
said Lil Cain.
Look, I've got a letter of commission as well.
Hooray! Said Lil Abel. And the two brothers hugged each other joyfully. And they lived next door from that day to this, happily ever after.
There is a chill in the room. Cain pokes the fire with a large iron poker.
That was undoubtedly the most meretricious garbage I've ever heard.
You know something? When you tell stories, you don't stutter.
Really? Oh, I hadn't noticed.
Well, I liked your story. I thought it was sweet. And I'm sure Daniel liked it too. Thank you, Abel.
Look, can I ask a dumb question? All this biblical stuff, I mean, how true is it? Are you guys the real Cain and Abel? Are you the real Eve? And I mean, you know, how does it all tie in with cavemen and dinosaurs and all that shit?
Oh, this wasn't on Earth.
Shut up. What's the point in having secrets and mysteries if you're gonna blab them to every Tom, Tit, Dickie Bird, and Harrier? Next thing you'll be telling him the truth about parliaments of rooks.
You mean, you know?
Of course he knows, but he won't tell you.
I could if I wanted to.
But you won't.
Please put the poker down, Cain.
Go away, all of you. Fun's over. Go on. Get out.
But we were all having such a nice time.
Out.
Daniel, say goodbye to Goldie.
Goldie!
Goodbye, Daniel. Come back whenever you want to. I think Goldie likes you.
Well, that was interesting, wasn't it? Hey, Eve. Hello? Anyone home?
Oh, sorry, Matthew. I was miles away.
Yeah? Penny for your thoughts.
I was thinking about rooks. One on each corner of the board. Two to a player, four for a boy.
Give.
Yes, you're a boy, Daniel.
Matthew!
Yeah? What?
It's not parliament or a trial. The rook in the middle of the field is a storyteller. It's telling the rest of them a story. And when it finishes, it finds out whether or not they like the story it told.
Poor Abel.
You told him. I told you not to tell him, and you told him. It was my mystery, and you gave it away.
But Cain, it's not one of the big secrets. It's not important.
Not important.
Stop!
That's not the point.
Cain grabs Abel's bloodied corpse by the collar and belt and drags it towards the fireplace.
I keep telling you, it's the mystery that endures, not the explanation. A good mystery can last forever. The mysterious corpse has a magic all its own. Nobody really cares who done it. They'll pick you to pieces if you tell them, little brother. It's for your own good.
He throws the body into the fire. Well, the head and shoulders, which is all that will fit. Enough to leave a mysterious corpse. At least until Abel resurrects himself. As he always does.
I'll see you tomorrow then. It's your turn to make dinner. Take care of yourself.
Back in the world of mortals, Lyta has spent a peaceful hour while Daniel slept.
Oh, it's a time.
Oops, oh, time for Danny's din-dins. Hey, honey!
Meep!
Oh, did you have a nice dream? I bet you did. Come on up. Oh, there we go. Hey, Daniel, what you got there, huh? Show Mama.
Daniel is clutching a black raven's feather in his tiny hand.
Ah, dirty old feather. Ew, where on earth did you get this from?
Birdie!
Kids. Little mysteries, all of you. Like I said, Danny boy, you